Hi, and welcome to Sustainable Growth Voice. We're kicking off a brand new series on COP28 with a little discussion of what to expect. I'm Heather Dinwoodie, and I'm joined by Julia Bataro and Felicia Jackson, who is on the ground in Dubai to report on what's going on. Sophie, why don't you tell us what's unfolded so far?
Well, for those of our audience who don't know the COP process, basically, all year round, there are negotiations around the climate treaty, the Paris Agreement, and they culminate every year in the Conference of the Parties, which is where all the different states get together and negotiate the details, not just of how things work technically, but how we should go about implementing change, how we go about taking the world from a place in, you know, in danger of climate impact, and one that has successfully achieved a net zero transition. And there's so many different things to resolve this COP. It's incredibly contentious. There are huge arguments. It was meant to be the implementation COP. We were going to have the global stocktake, which was signaled in Glasgow at COP26. This was supposed to give us the numbers of where we are and set the ground for countries to set out new nationally determined contributions, which is how they intend to act on climate change. It's been this big discussion all year because the president designate of COP28 is actually Sultan Al-Jaber, who is the chief executive of ADNOC, which is the UAE's big energy company. So that's raised lots of debate around fossil fuels, but we've got a lot of things to sort out, from climate finance to biodiversity finance to the carbon markets to loss and damage, from the global goal on adaptation, what's happening with methane. There's so many different elements coming together, and we've got two tracks really that are going to be happening at once, one of which is what are we going to do, and the other one is the technical details of how we're going to do it. But what's really important for this COP, I think, to understand is the numbers that are coming out from the global stocktake are basically saying that only, I think, out of 40 indicators, only one is on track for 2030. The world is in a position where emissions are continuing to rise, and we need to actually cut global emissions by 46% by 2030 if we're going to stay on track.
And delving in a bit more on that global stocktake, what exactly will the discussions be covering during COP, and what has already happened?
So the global stocktake really is just about identifying where countries and regions actually sit. It's looking at their emissions pathways. It's looking at the actions that they've implemented. And, you know, what we're seeing is just how far off track we are. Really, what it's identified is what needs to happen to affect change. And one of the things that was being discussed is the fact that changing the energy system could actually provide about 3/4 of the needed reductions that in emissions that we need. So that could make a fundamental difference. The question is whether or not that's achievable in the current environment. We need to change industry and transport. So that means that countries need to find new ways of encouraging increased efficiency. We need to address global logistics and supply chains. And most importantly, we need to find new ways to protect forests and nature, which itself actually opens up the potential for conversations, developing metrics together with the actions that need to be taken under the Global Biodiversity Framework, which was actually signed last year. So one of the things that I think is quite exciting about this particular COP is for the first time, the three different treaties that were the result of the Rio Conference, which is the Climate Change Treaty, the Biodiversity, and the Treaty to Combat Desertification. These groups are all getting together to try and work together and find some kind of holistic way to change the system.
And that's something I found when I was doing my review of the history of COP, which is available now on our site, that these things were kind of born together and then maybe sort of diverted from one another. And now we're really seeing them coming back together. But touching on the first of those issues, the energy transformation that we need to achieve net zero, I think, Julia, you've been looking into a bit of that and maybe what discussions we can expect around the phase out of fossil fuels.
Definitely. This is going to be discussions that are definitely going to be fraught because there are many countries with many different opinions. I would say there are three kind of factions in this. There are the countries that want a complete phase out of fossil fuels, and these are nation islands like Vanuatu, and also the European Parliament. And then there are countries that agree on a phase out of unabated fossil fuels, and this includes, confusingly, all the EU member states. Unabated means that, you know, it leaves the door open to continuing production as long as it's offset in some way. So this could be either by buying carbon credits or by implementing technologies like carbon capture and storage, which is all well and good. The problem is that these technologies are quite new and currently unproven or difficult to scale. So we're basically saying, yes, we will continue producing oil and gas, and hopefully these technologies will work. And so you see here that many people, many environmentalists are concerned about this. And then finally, there are also countries that say that a future without fossil fuels is unrealistic. And here I'm quoting China's climate envoy, who said this a few weeks ago. So we can see that this discussion is prime for disagreement. The problem is that global warming is accelerating, so we need action now. We really cannot afford any more details. So it's quite difficult to say what will come out at this COP. But, you know, there's been delays for so many years about what to do with fossil fuels. So really, we need this COP to have an outcome on this aspect.
Can I just jump in here? Because I think this is a really, really important point. Which is that CCS, you know, the issue is the technology exists, it's just never been commercial. And even though it might be a necessity for certain hard to abate sectors that you can capture the CO2, in the end, it does seem to be used as a potential technological solution, which is allowing the fossil fuel industry to prevaricate and to delay what really needs to happen. And this really closely links to the climate finance conversation, because there are countries which can't get access to climate finance for development, so they're turning to the domestic exploitation of oil and gas.
And that conversation around sort of whether or not fossil fuels can be abated kind of leads us into the discussion of the carbon markets and Article 6. And Felicia, perhaps you could tell us a little more about that.
Well, Article 6 is, as you say, it's the climate framework's approach to carbon trading. We all know about the controversies that have taken place this year in the voluntary carbon markets. But Article 6 is about the compliance market. It's got really three main approaches, and they're normally referred to, funnily enough, by the paragraphs in which they appear in the treaty. So the ones that are of interest are Article 6.2, Article 6.4, and Article 6.8. So Article 6.2 is relatively straightforward. That's an accounting framework, because a lot of the accounting for carbon, accounting for climate finance, has been really challenging and problematic. So what it does, it provides a framework that supports internationally transferred mitigation outcomes, otherwise known as ITMOs, because the climate negotiators do love an acronym. They are beginning to be used between countries, but there are issues around the rules. How do you transfer emission reductions from one country to another? How can that action be used somewhere else? And what happens if they get double counted? There's also questions about whether or not it should be possible to revoke them in case the issuing country has a problem with its own decarbonisation plans. So Article 6.4 is the replacement for the compliance markets. And for those of you who've been following this market for a while, basically a replacement for the CDM. Article 6.4 is going to be called the Sustainable Development Mechanism. And really, this is about carbon credit trading. There was hope that the rules would be finalised at this COP, but as the guidance on what should be discussed was only released about a week ago, it may prove a little bit more complicated than expected. And the last one is probably one we know about the least, but has some really interesting potential, and that's Article 6.8. So that is about non-market strategies. And it's the idea that markets don't have to be the only solution. Are there different ways of collaborating that we might move forward with? There's actually quite a lot of expectation about what Brazil's going to bring to the table in terms of forestry, especially, and biodiversity. So there's a lot to be discussed, a lot to be ironed out. And as ever, there's a lot of arguments to be had.
Well, I'm sure we'll be checking back in with you to hear more all about that. But it's not just about carbon, is it? I know that methane is also going to be a bit of a hot topic at this year's discussion. Julia, perhaps you could tell us a little more about that.
Definitely. So methane is very hot indeed. We know that it has more warming potential than CO2, and it's caused 30% of the temperature increases since the Industrial Revolution. So we really need to do something about this. And here we go back to the fossil fuel industry, because alongside agriculture and food waste, it accounts for around half of the global methane emissions. So this COP will see a real push to eliminate these emissions, and we will see how committed the oil and gas industry is. So when it comes to the oil and gas industry, is mostly about flaring. And so some experts say that there is a commercial opportunity there, because until now, it's been more convenient to just leave the methane as flaring, so just dispersing in the atmosphere. But actually, by implementing some technologies that allow to capture this methane and turn it into gas, you know, it could be a commercial opportunity. Now, we're still discussing phasing out fossil fuels, so obviously it's not, you know, a silver bullet solution, but still we need to address these emissions.
And there's also a lot of discussion around agriculture. So for the first time, the climate negotiations have got a full day targeting food and agriculture. And when you consider the amount of methane emitted through enteric fermentation, which for those of us who haven't just been reading about it, is the way that cows and sheep process their food. But there's a lot of methane involved in that. So there need to be changes to agricultural practices as well.
And I mean, undermining all of these discussions, there's got to be some conversation about finance, hasn't there? Who's paying for this? Why are we assigning responsibility to some people more than others? And that debate has been going on for as long as I can remember. So what can we expect from this year's discussions, Fee?
It's really difficult to know. Because actually, in my opinion, finance is almost the thing that that connects every single decision that has to be made. There are trade-offs that are going to be made between different decisions based on who's got what money, where's it going, and how it's going to be spent. Climate finance itself is obviously seen as a particular topic. The $100 billion a year in climate finance that was promised from the Global North to the Global South in 2009 may have finally been achieved this year. What there's going to be a lot of discussion around is what the post-2025 target's going to look like. I've got no idea how that's going to go. A number of the people I've spoken to have actually suggested that we won't get an answer at this COP. You know, it'll come out to sometime next year. But this also relates to the global goals of adaptation and loss and damage. Because where the money's coming from, who is taking responsibility, who is deciding who gets money and in what form? One of the things I think is going to be most exciting about climate finance is the potential discussion of the Bridgetown Initiative, which was put forward at the last COP by the Prime Minister of Barbados, which is reform of the multilateral development banks, basically the reform of the international finance architecture. It may not be perfect, but there's a great piece of research that just came out of BlackRock's Investment Institute. And they actually have calculated that reform of the multilateral development banks is likely to result in about $200 billion a year more for emerging markets. So there's lots of different elements in play and lots of different pieces of the puzzle that have to be put together. What we don't know is how that's going to play out on the ground.
Well, I guess we'll all have to keep our fingers crossed for some good decisions on that front. And that's all we've got time for today, but please do check back in next week where we'll have a bit of an update, and check our site for our daily coverage. We've been SG Voice, and thanks again for listening.